Bible Studies show. Whoa, what up is Ruth? And she fell on her face.
Oh no.
Okay, so she and Ruth are kicking it in Bethlehem to come unto a people.
Oh my god.
Which doubt the Lord.
So she's like, don't text him.
Wash thyself therefore and anoint thee. I'm surprised.
Because it's weird.
Good thing I have the whole Bible memorized.
Let's be so awake and sober.
We're so awake right now.
We're so very not tired.
Oh, and we're starting so late because I wouldn't shut up. I just unpacked like 5 trunk loads onto Angela. Thank you for... that.
I'm so happy to do that, Lily.
And now that it's the witching hour, let's get started. Hello, and welcome to Bible-ish, the podcast where we tell Bible stories. I'm Lily.
It's going to be one of these. I almost interrupted you. and I'm Angela after you said hello and welcome to Bible-ish.
And I'm Angela.
Anyway, I'm Angela.
And neither of us are religious experts, but we aren't here to tell you a moral. We're here to tell you a story.
Yeah.
And I'm Angela.
At Bible-ish, we're serving up equal parts epic tale summary and drunk literary analysis. We are not here to preach, so get ready to hear these stories in a brand new way. Also, we don't do these stories in any particular order, but you can access a full list of our episodes on our Patreon. Our Patreon is where our amazing subscribers help keep the show going. You can sign up and join for as little as $1 a month. And also, by doing that, you will get some really fun perks, including a handwritten postcard or a Bible-ish wine chalice, for example. Mm-hmm. We are really, 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 really grateful for everyone who supports us on Patreon every month. So if you'd like to join us at patreon.com/Bible-ish podcast.
And this week is the rest of the book of Ezra. And guess what, Angela?
What, Lily? Even
I bought a better microphone. Not for this episode.
I was like, wait a minute.
But for the next ones.
That's so exciting!
Yeah, we are excited to bring you guys better quality sound.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that and happy to be able to share improvements with you and the podcast.
Yeah.
So I don't have a question for you this week. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
My question, I guess, is kind of buried in the story.
Ooh, a scavenger hunt.
It's just if you remember something, so you better remember this time, because last episode you dropped the ball on that third king.
No.
All right. Last week we introduced the second. The Second Temple period, which, get this, is the period in which the Second Temple was erected.
What?
Not a second temple, like there were two of them, but another same temple on top of the smashed up one.
Yeah, just right on top.
Babylon did the smashing. But then King Cyrus was like, I'm going to start the Persian Empire. Bye-bye, Babylon. Also, I don't know what Jerusalem is, but it sounds fine, and I don't need whoever you people are as a servant class at the moment, so you can go back to now Trans Euphrates to make it economically beneficial for me since it's all rubble right now.
Yeah, and everyone cheered.
And then everyone cheered. Then a bunch of old enemies of the Jews got the new king of Persia after King Cyrus to make them stop rebuilding the temple. But then the next king of Persia said that they could start again.
Yeah.
So that's where we are.
Thanks, Lily.
You're welcome.
I love that ketchup.
This story is from the book of Ezra, who just decided to enter his own story as a character. Now.
Yeah, we did go most of last episode not seeing him, so.
Ezra-less.
Yeah.
And I found this a little amusing, because it's like, where were you while they were building this whole temple? And now they're done with the majority of the physical labor, and it's, and all of a sudden he's like, well, guess I'd better head over and
waltz
start
on in.
Start telling them what to do. Because who even are you, Ezra?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh.
So, Ezra was the son of Sariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Shalom.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
The son of Zadok, the son of Ahitub, the son of Amariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Marioth, the son of Zerahiah, the son of Uzi, the son of Buki, the son of Abishua, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the chief priest.
Aaron!
Please tell me you remember who Aaron is. That was my question for you.
Wait a minute.
Oh my God.
It's so familiar.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Just, I know it. But I would just love to hear your take.
Oh my God.
Give me a hint. One little one.
Moses.
Yeah. Because he was the guy. Yeah.
He was the high priest and elder brother to Moses.
Yeah, like I said. Glad we're on the same page.
Oh, no.
And you know what else I know about him?
Mm-hmm.
He has a great-grand relative named Ezra.
Yes. Yes, he does.
Yeah. So, very familiar, actually. Uh-huh.
Yes. So, as Angela explained, he was the high priest and elder brother to Moses.
Yeah.
The role didn't go so well for him in the end, and he was killed off before entering the promised land for being unfaithful. See, when Moses was on the mountain getting the first set of tablets, all the people below were like, hey, Aaron, can we build an idol while Dad's away? And he basically responded, well, Dad said no, and Dad's dad said absolutely no, but if it will keep you guys busy and quiet so you stop fighting and bouncing off the walls, then yes, I guess you can build an idol.
Aaron.
Yeah, big mistake. Aaron's sons were also killed off because they made improper sacrifices as temple priests. So God fired them. Literally, he set fire to them. But Lily, you may ask, how is Ezra related to Aaron? If his sons died and women don't matter? Great question. Aaron had four sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Nadab and Abihu were the ones who were literally fired. And that second to last name I rambled off from the lineage list was Eleazar. Mm-hmm. And there is your refresher. He is a descendant of Aaron and his son Eleazar. And that's who Ezra is.
Got it.
And that's who Aaron was.
Yeah.
As Angela explained.
As I explained perfectly well. Moving on. Needed to hear Lily just recap as just so for clarity.
Ezra is fresh out of Babylon with a letter from King Darius, who is the current emperor of Persia. I'm going to go out on a limb here in guessing that Ezra's role for his court was like an ambassador. And that's why he had this in with King Darius. Not only was he a priest, he was also a speaker of law. I mean, he was not only a descendant of the brother of the guy who invented law itself, but also of an OG priest.
Yeah.
Aaron and Moses basically invented priests. That's why I think Ezra would be an ideal ambassador to Darius for his people. But since the Jews were returning to Jerusalem anyway to get it up and running again, it would make more sense for Darius to send Ezra there. That is my uneducated guess.
Mm-hmm.
So this letter Ezra has from the king is the one I mentioned in the last episode, saying they can have all this stuff and no one is to stop them from their goals at rebuilding the temple or they will be impaled.
Yeah, it was a lot of stuff. It was kind of like a lot of stuff.
Yes. Ezra and a bunch of other people are camping by the Ahava Canal on their way to Jerusalem. And I feel like I need to set the scene here because the Bible is horribly written at times and it's overlooking a major vibe right now. This is Exodus replayed, but in a different key.
Mm.
There's definitely some discord and confusion. Moses was like the conductor of this amazing opus of defiance and freedom. His people went from captivity to freedom in the most awesome, terrifyingly dramatic way possible. In this story, there has been a lot of time between this Exodus and their freedom. They did not gain it themselves or through divine wonders. Their captors were conquered, and they were told they could just go. They did not move in this big group through the Red Sea and the desert in hopes of finding a home. They had a home. It had just been reduced to rubble. So would they return? Had people already returned? What was the plan here? No one really knew. They would just hear rumors that some of them had returned and were thinking of rebuilding the temple. I guess what kind of disappoints me about the way the story is told is the lack of hope and faith, which Exodus has in abundance.
Yeah.
That does exist in this story too. It may be written a lot like a to-do list and a inventory, but it is ultimately a story of the lost, not only finding their way home again, but trying to recall that home from a pile of rubble.
Yeah.
In the previous episode, I mentioned that whole list of things they were allotted, including the return of the temple's treasures. Well, Ezra is the one who has been entrusted with the transportation of all these things. There are a lot of people with him in this encampment, but as he looks around, he notices some very essential people are missing. Levites.
Yeah.
You remember the Levites?
Yeah, because aren't they kind of like priests? Ish.
Yeah. They are basically the judges of yore. They are law, order, and faith, and he does not want to go anywhere or play Jerusalem 2.0 without them. So he goes and finds some.
Did you just find them in a field?
He just already knows the guy who knows the guy.
He went to the Levite store?
Yes, and he picked up
a bushel.
Eleazar, Ariel, Shemaiah, Elnathan, Jarib, Elnathan, Nathan, Zechariah, and Meshullam, as well as Joiarib and Elnathan, who were...
There's a lot of Elnathans.
I know.
Why can't they give, like, Elnathan P? Little Elnathan. Elnathan Jr. Or the third.
Or maybe he just... Forgot he already listed Elnathan, and he just is like, what was that other guy's name? Elnathan.
And then he kept going.
Also, I love that was like the popular name of the time right now. Like, everyone's naming their son Elnathan.
Yeah, that's the Madison of
It's the Mason it's of the McKenzie. 2020.
Oh my god.
Oh, and Elnathan.
Also, as well. And I'm Elnathan.
Sorry about not being able to pronounce biblical names.
That's okay, Lily. I forgive you. Thanks, even though guys. You were there and you heard it with your own ears firsthand.
One of the reasons he wants Levites there is because they are great with resource management, as a rule. They were like the tax collectors and keepers of the treasury.
Yeah.
There is a lot of loot all of a sudden, and Ezra wants to make sure that whatever they've started with is what they end with. So he has it all weighed out.
Mm.
The other reason he wants Levites around is that they are in charge of sacrifices, and Ezra has a lot of sanctifying to do before he leaves. Because as Ezra was leaving the company of King Darius, he asked Ezra if he'll be all right traveling that whole way with a bunch of treasure. And Ezra responds, "Our God is an awesome God.
Even.
He's all powerful, and we are returning to the home he gave us to place these things in his house. He will protect us, and nothing shall befall us because he is a very scary and powerful, and no evil we may encounter could possibly stop us." To which the king replies, "Okay, I was just wondering because it would have totally been not an issue for me to send along my guards and some horsemen for your protection.
Just take them.
But you seem very confident that you don't need any of that."
Just take them, Ezra!
No, he can't now. So Ezra would have absolutely loved some added security, which he admits, but he kind of dug himself into this hole. So he made everyone fast for days in order to consecrate themselves.
He kind of, it's just, he's like placing the burden on everyone else. Like, okay, guys, we gotta be really good for God because I may or may not have turned down an awesome security detail. And yes. So,
exactly.
Nobody eats. Okay. No food till Jerusalem.
Then we will be feeling really strong and ready to take on not only a journey, but defense.
Yes. Yeah. Because I made a good choice. I made a great decision.
Afterwards, he told everyone that they would be leaving for Jerusalem now. And no one better touch the stuff because it's a free will offering. You may remember what a free will offering is from the story of Achan and Joshua. Achan's the guy that you hate so much. If you remember, he's the lying stealing stealer.
He's a lying, stealing, stealer thief, okay? And he didn't tell anyone, and then everyone was like, why is all the bad stuff happening? And he's like,
Where are we dying all over the place?
Yeah.
Calling something a free will offering is claiming it for God. If you steal it, you are stealing from God, and that is punishable by death. Not just you, as Akon learned, but your whole family and extended family, because it was believed that it would curse everyone as a people, not just that household or that tribe.
I bet someone's going to touch stuff. I don't mean to be a spoiler, but they didn't really do a good job any of the other times when it was like, hey, this one thing, don't touch it. Hey, just this one time, can you not touch it?
See that box over there? This one. Yeah, the one you're touching that I just Stop said it. Not to touch. So they set off for Jerusalem, and lucky for them, they were not robbed on the way.
Oh my God.
Once they got there, they sacrificed a bunch of animals at God's barbecue and weighed out all the treasure they left with. All of it was accounted for.
Okay. Checkpoint.
Ezra then gives his letter from the king to the government official of Trans-Euphrates, and they in turn make sure he is given everything he needs as per the letter's instructions. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. Everything is going just great. Just one problem that the leaders of the different houses have noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Intermarriages. Now, I know it may be super hard to believe and very disgusting to think about, but when they were in exile, separated from their people and their culture, some of them married those uncircumcised folks and women who prostitute themselves.
Uh-oh.
Gross people like Canaanites, Hittites, Jebusites, Ammonites, Moabites, Egyptians, and Amorites. Basically, everyone they used to fight and or defend themselves from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In exile, they somehow find a way to get along, but now it's not okay.
Uh-oh.
And I know I'm being judgmental. On the one hand, it looks like they found a way to set all that aside. But on the other hand, they saw it as an issue for cultural and religious preservation, which mm-hmm. was definitely at risk, having been in exile.
Well, and they fought so hard to be like, no, one God, only one God. And then I feel like to like intermingle with other people who may or may not be quite as gung-ho about that, as in other times, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little threatening. A little bit threatening when you're trying to build your new temple full of stuff.
It is. And we have to be understanding of the fact also that they were almost wiped out again.
Yeah.
They fully believed that this was due to a lack of faith and worship, and that their recent freedom was God's forgiveness for that. So, of course, they are going to be sticklers for the law.
Yeah.
They have been extremely well behaved throughout this whole book, which does not happen often. They are following Moses' teachings to the letter because they are terrified their newfound freedom could be taken away again.
Hmm.
After the leaders tell Ezra about the intermarriages, he acts very shocked and appalled, pulling his hair out and tearing his clothes off. I want to also add that many of these cases of intermarriages could very well have been self-preservation. So is it fair to ask someone to suffer and or die rather than marry someone outside of your faith? Ezra would say yes, because he is just shook, to yeah. say the least, and somehow did not see this coming. After being mad and throwing a literal tantrum for one whole day, he prays to God. I will summarize the 3-paragraph prayer. Oh my God. I am so ashamed. I can't even look up at you because our sins are so high up that you can see them. We suck historically and are the worst.
Sorry. We suck historically.
But you have overlooked that for 1 second. I don't even know what to tell you. When you led us to this place, you told us it was full of grossos we shouldn't touch. And we gone and done it. We don't even deserve your forgiveness because we are just the literal worst. Amen.
Amen. Okay, bye. Damn. He's pretty perturbed. But also, I mean, I wonder, I feel like he's perturbed, but he may also be a little paranoid because of the, like, nature. I don't know. It just feels like in character with him being like, no, we don't need security. Don't worry about it. And then being like, shit, actually, that would have been great. I don't know. He just seems like.
And then he gets there and he's like, all right, we're all following the rules.
Yeah.
This is going great. And people are like, oh, there's this thing in the background.
And yeah. He's like, no. What? The one thing that could ruin this for everyone.
So Ezra is shouting all of this and still making a huge scene, which has caused a crowd of onlookers to gather around him. They start shouting and crying too, saying they have sinned or know people who have sinned by marrying foreign women. Mm. See how quickly the issue changed from intermarriages of both men and women to the intermarriages of just women? That is because of the matrilineal descent that exists in Judaism to this day, depending on the denomination. Textually, you wouldn't think the mother mattered since they're never named in the lineage. It's always the father. But then there are instances in the stories like that of Abraham where Sarah's children are considered Jewish, but Hagar's are non-Jewish. This is true for his son Isaac as well, who fathered Jacob and Esau. Jacob's children are considered Jewish, but Esau's children are not because he married foreign wives.
Yeah.
The thing that's not being said, though, is why. And that's probably because it's very obvious who gave birth to who. Whom. Who gave birth to whom?
Very proper.
And less obvious who that child was conceived by, if that makes sense. So this is not so much female empowerment in assigning a religion to a child as it is female mistrust.
Yeah.
Off again.
Yeah.
Because that baby definitely came out of her, but who's to tell who put it in there?
Slut. Just kidding.
Yeah. Ezra gets everyone good and wound up, and they all have this meeting with the heads of the households and the elders. They decide that all of the foreign women and their children have to leave.
Jeez, you guys.
Not the men. Mind you, they can stay or be converted. Just the women and also their children. This is just, I can't with this. Damn. It's so tiring. The mistrust and devaluing of women in this entire effing book is just the most.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, they all followed their husbands to this place. They don't know this place.
Yeah.
And if they do, they don't think all that highly of it, I'd imagine, for a lot of historical reasons.
Yeah.
But they were like, okay, honey, let's go to a dilapidated city and rebuild a temple to your god. I'll follow you and support you in this and look after our children. Then they get sent away.
Yeah. Like, I walked literally this whole way for your dumbass.
For this project you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the end of the Book of Ezra.
What?
Yes.
That's all he did?
Yes, there is another book that we'll get into that is actually going to be really interesting because they have lots more work to do. But thanks, Ezra, for showing up late and being an absolute homewrecker while your people tried to rebuild their homes. Good job. The end.
What the actual hell?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's the Book of Ezra.
I mean, that was a lot of stuff. But, like, the fact that that's his whole arc is, like, I'm going to show up late and screw you all over.
And break up a lot of families.
Yeah.
And send all these women just away. Yeah. I don't care where they go. Just take your children and leave.
That's a story I want to.
You can't play Jerusalem 2.0 with us.
Yeah. We gotta write the story of what those women do. And they probably make some cool lady town of them and all
their
kids.
That'd be awesome.
And they raise their kids, like, together.
Up in the hills, they just make this, like, female commune.
Yeah. Ladyville.
Ladyville.
No boys allowed. Kip out.
Kip out.
Dang. Get bent, ladies.
Again. Some more. Thank you for your service.
Well, I just want to see the temple. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want no one to get kicked out.
Yeah. Well,
that's a bummer. He did that.
We're going to see Jerusalem get rebuilt in the next book. And wow. I did read ahead a bit, and it's a pretty fun story with a far more present character.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, this was also still incredible. And actually, I don't remember, like, too many of the details, but after last episode where you were talking about Cyrus, I did Google it afterwards, and I was like, yeah, what the frick? Like, wildly incredible empire building.
Yeah. He fucking killed it in the Crusader Kings game.
Yeah. Damn. But, all right, Ezra. All right. Maybe that's why that band's called Better Than Ezra. Just saying. But he helped them get there. And so now they're there. And I'm excited. And also, nonetheless, thank you for telling us this story, Lily. Because it was still a really good story. Even if he's kind of a stinker.
He helped get a lot of people safely there. He reestablished the Levites.
Oh, yeah. He did do that.
Into the society. And he made sure all of God's treasures were returned to his house.
That's true. He did do all that, you know, so I'll give him that.
And he really buttered up King Darius, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And he really set him up.
Yeah. Okay. All right, he can stay.
But not the women.
but none of the women and none of their children. So. Lady Town, here we come.
Lady Town.
Man, Lady Town would be so great.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of
and just
ladies.
Like a series of caves.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, Lily. That'd be so cool. But thanks for telling us this story.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, that was really cool. If you enjoyed this episode or any Biblish episodes that you've heard in the past, I want to tell you about an exciting business opportunity. And by business, I mean being in the business of keeping the show going. We have a Patreon where, for as little as $1 a month, you can get really fun perks like handwritten postcards from us or a shout out on the show, or we'll write you into one of the episodes, which is also a perk that someone should redeem because I'm really dying to do it. But literally for as little as $1 a month, you can join our Patreon and be supporting the show, helping us stay on the air. And also just part of the Biblish community, where you also get access to a complete list of episodes and kind of insider knowledge if and when we're doing anything cool and fun. So join us over at patreon.com/BibleishPodcast. That's patreon.com/BibleishPodcast. And come join the Bible-ish fam.
Again, we are not here to mock or glorify the Bible. We are just two modern-day ladies trying to wrap our heads around an ancient text. Thank you for listening.
And I'm Angela.
Now, all the women leave. Goodbye.
Goodbye.